Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. New SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Welcome to Game On. We have a busy show ahead. We have the Champions League action. Liverpool has started already against Salzburg. In athletics, we spoke to Kelly Holmes about Russia and Mo Farah and plenty more. Hurling. Can a yellow slitter really improve hurling? We'll talk to Shane McGrath about that and plenty more.
All that and much more between now and 8 o'clock. Text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On, or you can send us a voice note on WhatsApp on 087 187 9200.
How many days is it to Christmas, Donald?
Oh, come on, Grinch, you tell me.
It's 15 days to Christmas.
Yes, I can't wait.
You excited about tonight, Ruby?
Yeah, it's going to be a short show, guys.
Why?
We're playing pre-records from about 6:15. We're getting out of here.
Explain what a pre-record
is. Don't tell the producers. This show is not live tonight.
Marie, are you excited?
I'm excited because we're going to the HRI Awards after the show, and I think Ruby's going to get an award.
Do you?
Yeah. I have no idea what for, but every time you go to an award ceremony, since I've known you, you've got an award.
I'm on that kind of real slow lap of honour on the way out the gate.
You're doing a Rory best on it.
Certainly are. Messi. You know what I can't... Lionel Messi, I meant. Not Messi in general.
Yeah, right.
We never
Where's
get
HR again?
We never get a scoop out of you. And then I picked up the papers today and you're all over the papers, Ruby.
But that's not a scoop, Donica. I was there on behalf of the Irish and the Jockeys Fund donating money to concussion research. That was hardly a scoop now.
Okay, but it's worth talking about. So tell us what you did.
Oh, Michael Turner, who used to be chief medical officer for the BHA or the Jockey Club at the time, I suppose concussion protocols were always in racing and they were always there from the early 2000s. Racing started to understand concussion probably before most other sports. Michael Turner was big into it. Then Adrian McGoldrick, who took over from Walter Halley in Ireland, he also got into it. And they're doing research into concussion about the long-term effects. And is there any long-term effects? We all know about the film in America, Concussion, and what went on there with the NFL and the supposed effects of concussion. And while they proved they did in America, with the research Michael Turner and AJ McGoldrick are doing in Ireland and the UK on retired riders, seems to be contradicting what they proved in America. So I'm hoping it's contradictory. I had a few concussions, Donic. I'm sure you did as well.
Yeah, I had a few. They're nasty though, aren't they? They're not nice.
I don't know. I think when I got concussed, it usually you were knocked out and never felt the pain of what you were after breaking. So there was a plus side to it.
Yeah. I think it's something that we'll have to have a deeper discussion about, because there's so many angles and so many aspects of it that we need to tease out further, and I'm sure we will probably after Christmas, but still we'll do it because we've only 15 days to Christmas, as Ruby said. Now, Donica.
I was forced upon me by Donica. Do you see the size of him? Like,
no, I you're all over the papers. I did get a kick out of one of the photos of you in the MRI scanner. I would love to see your body in an MRI scanner. No spleen, broken legs, broken shoulders. Imagine that.
There's plenty of them. I'd say it's only a matter of going into Santry and clicking into the file. I'd say it's all there.
Anna Falvey. I'm getting on to Dr. Anna Falvey, who works out in Santry. I'd love actually your skeleton, just to see it.
It's fairly rickety.
Donica, you're going to like this. We have some music.
Yeah. How many? That isn't music, Marie. That's the Frames. That's from our soul as Irish people. I just love it. This is one of the songs that used to be on in our dressing room. I remember myself, Peter Stringer, I'd probably lash my head off the wall. He wouldn't be that stupid. So, but we've a pair of tickets for anyone, and all they need to do is text or WhatsApp in, and it's quite simple. 51552, name and where you're from, and if you want to go to see the Frames. So that's it. And the WhatsApp number is 087 187 9200. So
and if you are sending us an audio WhatsApp message, please give us your name.
Yeah.
So we know who you are.
And And don't be drunk like that fella last night.
Oh yeah, that one. Yeah, that was kind of unplayable.
So when and where is this concert?
When and where is this concert is a brilliant question, Marie.
Seeing as you went upstairs to all your 2FN buddies and got these tickets for the competition, we're assuming you know when this concert is.
I'm going to say this, it's next year, maybe. Saturday, June the 20th, 2020.
We knew you'd know.
And where is it,
the
Marie?
Royal Hospital in Kilmainham.
Ah, what a place to see them.
Yeah, right smack bang in the middle of the GAA Championship.
Oh, I love this tune.
Probably be better than the match that's on that day.
Speaking of GAA, there was a small bit of news today. Dr. Con Murphy is retiring as from his day job as doctor. Now he's staying on as the doctor with the Cork Hurlers and Footballers and also with UCC. He's been a huge part of many GAA people's lives and rugby players, Donica.
Yeah.
You can tell us about that in a sec, but he's left a huge impact around GAA circles, and I'm sure he won't mind me saying that there's a lot of people, I think, who are indebted to him because of things that he's done, the way that he's helped out so many people in so many different sports, and he's just done so with absolute class. Everywhere you go, everybody knows who he is and everyone has a great story about him.
You're right, he's a beautiful man, he really is. He cares about people, of course he looks after sports people, and GAA is his first love, but you know, he's Dr. Sport really, and he's just a fella that cares about people.
Any good Dr. Con stories, Marie, for us?
I have one about Donica.
Go on.
He told me that he would have cauliflower ears if it wasn't for him.
I do have cauliflower ears, but he helped me with them. So I used to this is an awful thing to say. I used to go on the hop from school to go down to Dr. Con to get my ears drained. So when you play rugby, you get friction on your ears. So they become this really bad injury. Now, don't worry about your spleen or anything like that, Ruby. This proper rugby injury. Cauliflower ears. And he used to put a syringe in them and take out the fluid that was in them.
Are cauliflower ears sore?
No, they go hard. They're sore at the time when it's full of that stuff that Dr. Con used to take out.
Puss.
Yeah, it's kind of, what is it, kind of yellowy old stuff.
Yeah, that's what that is.
And
yeah,
your ears are going to be like that for life.
They're actually not that bad.
I'm telling you, when I'm going to HR, you can follow me.
Now that I pointed it out, you keep looking at it. But you know what? Whatever about that, he was just a special guy. Look, it's just that he's retiring from general practice. I think this is good for everyone around Cork, because Dr. Con will be around more. But
we had a great WhatsApp last night from Timmy Crow.
We did.
Timmy Sheehan.
And Marie has a story about Dr. Con and Timmy Crow.
When I, just after I had Timmy, I was talking to Dr. Con on the phone because he's a really good friend of my husband. And it was only like a couple of minutes after I had him, and I went on the phone to him and he said, congratulations, yeah, lovely baby boy born, that's brilliant, Marie. Here, I'm standing beside Jimmy Barry Murphy, I'll just put him on to you. And I'd never met Jimmy Barry Murphy or spoken to him. And Jimmy came on the phone and he gave me a congratulations and a best luck and told me I did a great job. It was fantastic.
In the labour ward.
Hey, there you go.
The GAA is one big family, isn't it?
Did you try to get an interview or an exclusive off JBM?
Oh, of course I did, yeah. Yeah, I said, sure, look, I'll give you a shout back later on, maybe, and we can have a talk about Cork GAA.
But he's someone we gotta chat to Dr. Con, yeah. I think. And we got to get people around him that matter to him and that care about him. And
by the sounds of it, that's going to be everybody that ever kicked a football or hurled in the whole of Munster.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And probably the whole of Ireland. Mm-hmm. So there is no score yet in the Liverpool-Salzburg game. We're watching it here on the TV.
But Donners, what's the other match? Napoli are one up against
Gink. Come on, Gink.
Did you put your scarf on? You have
it's outside. I'll get it there in a few minutes. Yeah.
Ronan, our producer's bringing it in for you.
Yeah.
Now we have Mark Langdon from the Racing Post on the line. Mark, it is nil all in that game, but Liverpool need to win to progress to the next round of the Champions League, and they're not expected to have it all their own way. Are they having it all their own way, Mark?
No, absolutely not. A draw will be okay for Liverpool, but this is a game that already inside the opening 20 minutes we've seen both teams you know, cause a lot of trouble to the other one when they've gone forward. Alisson has made a brilliant double save from Huang, and also Salah and Mane have both gone close for Liverpool. The reverse fixture at Anfield, of course, was a chaotic affair, eventually won just about by Liverpool, and I don't expect anything different really from this game. These are two teams that are just going at each other, and I'm pretty sure that the goals will flow eventually.
How many changes has Jurgen Klopp made this evening, Mark?
No, he's gone really, really strong in terms of his team here. So, you know, we've got all of the fit and available big guns. There was talk that maybe Trent Alexander-Arnold wouldn't play, but no, this is sort of Liverpool. I mean, Fabinho's injured at the moment, but outside of that, Liverpool have got, you know, just about everybody that's fit playing for them. Van Dijk and Lovren at centre-half, Firmino and Salah and Mane up front. The Premier League's the priority for Liverpool this season, of course it is, but there's no way Jurgen Klopp wants to go out in the group stages of the Champions League. And I think given their cushion they've got in the Premier League, they may be thinking that this is a good opportunity maybe to win both this season.
He was asked about whether he was prioritising the Premier League or the Champions League, and he was in his usual funny form. He said, "That was cool last season. We want to do it again. Nothing else on our mind, and we've nothing better to do in the middle of May." And going on that team, he certainly wants to stay in the competition.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, last year there were people telling him, to rotate in the Premier League and just concentrate on the Champions League or the other way around. I mean, it's not the way that any of the top managers work, really. They want to win absolutely everything. When it comes to the World Club Cup that Liverpool are going to next week, they'll want to win that. And, you know, I think at elite level, you know, you can't ease off. It's not really in their nature. You just play to win every single game, and that's what Liverpool are trying to do now, as Mane again forces another good sop from the Salzburg goalkeeper. This is a game, like I say, that's been end to end from the first whistle, and just a matter of time, I think, before we see a goal.
Not obviously, but Liverpool are most likely going to have to score, because they've only kept one clean sheet in their last 14 games if they're going to get that draw.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the most remarkable thing, isn't it, really, about the way that Liverpool have sort of gone about this season. Only dropped 2 points in the whole of the Premier League. And last season, it was the defence everybody was raving about. And, you know, Virgil van Dijk was up for the Ballon d'Or winner. This season, actually, that they just haven't been keeping clean sheets, like you say. So it's been all on, really, the attackers to get the defence out of trouble. And more often than not, that they have managed to do just that. But I think that's something, maybe, I mean, Jurgen Klopp is somebody that's always looking, I suppose, and as are all the elite coaches, they're looking for as close to perfection as they can find. They're never relaxing, and just getting more clean sheets, I think, is probably going to be in his mind for the second half of the season. There's no reason why they should suddenly start leaking all these goals, but it has been a slight concern for them, but they've still found ways to win.
And we know Salzburg like scoring goals. They've scored at least two in all of their games at the Red Bull Arena so far this season. So Liverpool might struggle a bit at the defence to keep a clean sheet against a team with such quality. And we just saw they had a chance, a very good chance there.
Yeah, that was to Huang, who's already, like I say, forced a couple of good saves out of Alisson in this opening 20 minutes. Of course, Salzburg's main goal threat is Brett Haaland, who is the son of Alfie Inge Haaland, of course, who was involved in that very controversial moment with Roy Keane at Elland Road many years ago, when Haaland was injured off the back of a very strong Keane tackle. And I think it's fair to say there's no love lost between the two of them down the years. But he is somebody that I think you'll be seeing him at a big club very soon. Young Norwegian striker that is built for the Premier League. He made a massive impact against Liverpool at Anfield. Hasn't really been in the game in the first 20 minutes here, but is clearly a big threat to just about anybody in the Champions League so far this season. And already been talk of Manchester United and teams like that prepared to sort of, you know, put in really big bids for him come the summer. As is always with Salzburg, normally the next step for them is to go to their sister club from Red Bull Salzburg to Red Bull Leipzig in Germany. So it might be a frustrating time for somebody like Manchester United in terms of trying to get Haaland out of this kind of this Red Bull factory, as it were.
Mark, before we go to Chelsea, Lille, I know you're a big Spurs fan. Have you been happy with Jose Mourinho so far?
Yeah. I mean, I never wanted Pochettino to depart. I always felt he should have been given kind of as long as he wanted and needed to turn the team around, given what he'd done in his 5 years. But there's no denying that Jose Mourinho has come in and made a major impact. I think he's simplified the sort of team selection for everybody. Pochettino was rotating heavily, trying to find the right solution to the kind of the problems they were having in terms of, you know, keep on losing matches. Mourinho's come in, played the same formation every single game, and it's worked. And, you know, he's stiffened up the midfield, brought back Eric Dier. Dele Alli's playing better alongside Harry Kane. Heung-min Son scored a brilliant goal at the weekend, and Lucas has been chipping in with goals as well. So whether it lasts, you can never be sure with Jose Mourinho, because it's usually a sort of whirlwind. He's there for a couple of years and then he departs. But certainly at the moment, I think he's had a very positive impact on the team. And sort of from a Spurs fans' point of view, long may it continue.
Mark, obviously Chelsea, Frank Lampard's Chelsea, Evelyn, have had to dig pretty deep to stay in this Champions League, but Lille have lost four of their last five games away from home. It should be a bit easier for Chelsea tonight.
You would have thought so. I mean, this always looked like it was going to be kind of a free horse race, if you like, for you know, these Champions League sort of two qualification spots. Lille were always the outsiders. Valencia, Ajax, and Chelsea. And so it's proved. And we go down to the final match day. None of those teams have qualified. Ajax host Valencia in a sort of winner takes all clash. One of them very likely to go out. Chelsea, really, you couldn't ask for much more than a home game against the team that's already been eliminated, you know, to seal your qualification. I think it'll be a good sort of learning curve really for them in this Champions League. They are although a former winner, this is very much a sort of young team and one that's developing as the competition goes on. They've had some good moments, certainly away to Ajax earlier on in the competition. I thought they were very lucky to draw 4-4 against Ajax in the return game, even pretty fortunate last time against Valencia in that 2-2. Valencia missed a load of opportunities, a couple of open goals and a penalty. But at home to Lille, like I say, if you can't beat Lille at home, you don't deserve to be going through to the knockout stages.
And Mark, enter Barcelona. We know Barcelona have only won 5 of their last 15 Champions League away games. How do you think they'll fare tonight?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those classic games where the fixture list has been brutal to Borussia Dortmund and absolutely perfect to Inter, because Barcelona have already qualified, so they've left Lionel Messi and Gerard Piqué and a couple of others back in Barcelona to prepare for the weekend, and all of a sudden it makes it a much easier proposition, as easy as it can be when you're playing Barcelona, for Inter, who know if they win they'll join Barca in the last 16, and Borussia Dortmund are probably kicking themselves wishing it was them that was playing a weekend Barcelona. I'm sure it won't be a Barcelona team that kind of gives up. They'll still be trying, but it's a good opportunity, I think, for Inter to make the last 16. They're top in Serie A at the moment. Lautaro Martinez and Romelu Lukaku are absolutely flying up front. I just feel that extra motivation probably be the deciding factor.
Mark, there's almost 25 minutes gone now in Salzburg. Has anything changed there?
Not in terms of the score, still 0-0, but it's Salzburg, and it was that guy that I mentioned a little bit ago, Haaland, that's forced another good save out of Alisson. I know you can have sort of the commentator's curse on stuff like this and say that this game cannot finish 0-0, but there's already been 7 shots on target inside the opening 27 minutes, so I would be amazed if this game finished 0-0. And from a Liverpool point of view, I think they're giving up, you know, an uncomfortable amount of chances in this game. They need to tighten up. And Ruby was talking about the lack of clean sheets earlier on. They really need to sort of stiffen up and gain control of this game, because it's slipping away from them a little bit at the moment.
And then, Mark, just off the pitch, we heard today that Real Madrid striker Karim Benzema may be facing a criminal trial after France's highest court of appeal dismissed his appeal challenging the legality of a blackmail investigation. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back, you know, to a few years ago, in terms of it was heading towards the 2016 sort of European Championship. Karim Benzema was in the French national team, the Real Madrid striker, as was Mathieu Valbuena, who now plays in Greece for Olympiacos. What happened was Valbuena he had a sex tape on his phone. His phone had been stolen. Somebody was then blackmailing him, said they were going to take this public, this sex tape. Karim Benzema is associated to the people that are alleged to have stolen the phone. Benzema has been recorded saying that he can get the tape back, but it's going to cost Valbuena money to get it back. Benzema's sort of lawyers have been saying that this evidence was obtained illegally. The French courts have said that it's good to go. There's the very real prospect now of Benzema having to face a case against blackmail. In terms of what it meant on the pitch, Benzema has never played for France in the last couple of years, been kicked out of the national team. He's been sort of fighting this case for a long time, but it does now look like we could be heading for a trial.
That's probably disappointing for all concerned. Mark, thanks a million. We'll keep in touch with you about the Salzburg game throughout the show. And for those of you interested in the Napoli Genk game, it is now 2-0 to Napoli.
Yeah, we're heading for a break, and afterwards we've Dame Kelly Holmes. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Gillette Skin Guard Sensitive, the first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. So say bye-bye to shave irritation and razor bumps. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Welcome back. Text in here to 51552. Hi guys, can you please wish the very best of luck to 7-year-old Arwen Tennyson from Kildare? She is the mascot at the Chelsea versus Lille match tonight.
You bottled it, don't you?
Go on.
Kyle Dove. You didn't know what it was. You weren't sure, were you?
No, I wasn't.
That's a brilliant experience for a child to incredible, be a mascot isn't it? At that how game,
you,
yeah.
How do you get to do that?
I'm not sure. I think you can apply.
Competition, surely.
Text us in. 51552 if you know how you become a mascot.
In the League of Ireland, a lot of the clubs on their website have opportunities where you can just apply online.
Let's change it. So text in if you can help us give away a mascot spot. 51552.
If only we knew a Munster, former Munster rugby
player. I know, we know only on the connections, no?
I'm on that. Do you have mascots in horse race? Like, honestly, did someone like...
At Punchestown, yeah, on the last day of the Punchestown Festival, AES Champion Hurdle, they have mascots.
What do
they do? They hold the lead.
Just walk out
to the
with the jockeys.
I know you want to be one, Donegan.
I badly, but Ruby, can you make that happen?
Make it, of course, can. Get your lead a horse up.
Oh, just lead it up.
What's lead the horse.
I'd like bring
all it around the parade, ring the whole lot, jockey up out into the track.
Oh, you'll be the boss of the horse.
Best day ever.
No problem. How are you fixed? William Mullins has loads of runners the weekend. Short of staff, I'd say absolutely no problem.
I don't have to go on the horse, do I?
No, just lead it.
Okay.
They wouldn't let you on the horse.
What do you mean they wouldn't? This is.
You're right. These are racehorses, Donegan. Not you know.
Before we move on, actually, Donegan, you need to tell all of our listeners what happened this morning when you were out jogging.
I went for a run and someone just passing me was there. Oh, you're taking Ruby's advice and doing a bit, are you?
He was right. You were right. Yeah. You can see it in you already, done it.
Everyone needs a Ruby in their lives to keep them on the straight and narrow.
What you text me this morning?
No, don't. Don't go there, because when it comes to nutritional advice, you're not the man to listen to. It's wrong.
It is wrong.
It's but right. You're doing it.
Let's move on. So today, Donegan and I chatted to Kelly Holmes, and we're going to hear from her in more detail in our next hour. But she was very clear on her thoughts on the recent issues about doping in athletics.
Game on 2FM.
Kelly, just on your sport, it's quite different to what it was like when you were running, just in terms of the attention and the, I suppose, the athletics was so glamorous then, whereas now there's been a lot of controversy about it because of doping, the latest Russia banned from major international sporting events for 4 years. Do you think that this is going to work, this sanction is going to work, and that athletics can clean up its act?
Because athletics isn't in a great place, you know. You don't want this type of issues that are happening. But equally, these things have to happen to start combating the big problem. you know, doping in sport right across the board, not just athletics. You know, you look at weightlifting, you look at so many other sports that, you know, kind of it comes out, but is it as big as athletics because it's not as big as a sport in the public eye? But it has to be stamped out, and I think that this has to happen with individuals as well. There needs to be a no-tolerance policy. There needs to be higher bans, higher sanctions, higher risk, so that people don't take those risks, you know, because otherwise we're going to always be on the back foot of sanctioning something. But if we'd had the policies in advance, these sanctions, you know, you would assume wouldn't happen. So do I think it's the right thing to do for the sport to actually say they're making a stance? Absolutely. But there's a wider issue here. This isn't just them. It's not just Russia. There's too much greed in sport and money. You know, you've got agents that are corrupt. You've got doctors that are corrupt. You've got people selling the product. And then, you know, the team around an athlete. And then an athlete that might get coerced into, and any sports person get coerced into the sense of this is what everyone does to get to be good, which is absolute. Sorry, I was going to swear then. It's really, really not the way it goes. There is a few bad eggs, and unfortunately, the bad eggs then have other people around them, and it just, you know, it kind of just makes this issue worse. So sanction, yeah, I believe there should be sanctions, but it can't just be this country who are clearly done wrong. But do not tell me in sport others aren't doing it, and other individuals. So we need to come down harder. There needs to be a no tolerance policy, so that the people like myself that are clean, who work so hard to reach their full potential and literally blood, sweat and tears to stand on the rostrum because of pride of wearing your vest and seeing the national the flag flying and the national anthem playing and the medal around your neck. That's what we want to see. Real, true happiness, not tarnished by, oh, are they good or aren't they? Or are they cheating every time there's a great performance? Because it's just depressing.
Kelly, we saw then that UK Athletics announced a major review into whether mistakes were made in its handling of the Salazar scandal, and especially its decision to clear Mo Farah to continue training at the Nike Origin project after concerns were raised about the now disgraced coach in 2015. Do you think that there's a cloud hanging over Mo Farah's achievements?
Oh, God, that's a hard one. Where do you go to? There's a cloud. There's always going to be a cloud whilst his coach has got these issues surrounding him. You know, the coach had a lot of athletes, and all of those athletes and any athlete that have been involved with him are also going to have a cloud over their heads. So something needs to happen to be, you know, kind of put this to bed in one way or another. But you're never going to get... Sorry, just going to choke them. Never going to get away from a cloud when you've been coached by somebody who's now been banned from a sport and has got this tarnish over his head of have they kind of manipulated drugs and all of that lot and all the drug system and that. You're never going to get away from that cloud.
Kelly, for me, obviously a sports person as well, it's like athletics is held to a different level when it comes to the image of doping in sport. It's held to a higher account. Does that frustrate you? And what more can be done to tidy up sport in general from that terrible image?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. You know, athletics always does, because it's always been a high-profile sport in the calendar, and especially in the Olympic calendar. I think that the powers that be, you know, wider World Anti-Doping Authority have always kind of put this stance in. You know, people like the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, the IWF, the International Athletics, Amateur Athletics Federation, or whatever they're now called, you know, the BOA, everybody on a high level need to have this stance. It can't be just one organisation fighting for sport to clean its act. You know, sport governing bodies need to have criteria put in there where funding is not, you know, not given if a sports person is deemed to have, you know, cheated, because they need to take accountability themselves of putting in all of these fundamental process and laws and regulations to say if you are caught, then this happens, you know, and not just if you are caught, if you choose to dope, this happens. And I also think that my personal opinion is, you know, maybe an athlete might get done, but until everybody around them does. So it's, you know, I always thought, and this is kind of like sky thinking, but you know, if you have an athlete and they declare the team around them, so the physio, the coach, the training partners, the blah, 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 it's almost like you as a group are accountable for it, because that would then make other people around you go, hold on a minute, no, I don't agree with what you're doing, I'm getting out of here because that's ruining my reputation. Or if you're all squeaky clean, 100%, then you shouldn't care that all your team there sign a declaration to say, yeah, we're all accountable for anything that goes wrong. Because unless we start doing this, like, people are going to get away with it. You know, the cheats are ahead of the game. The scientists are ahead of the game that send in the products, that send into the corrupted group of people that then give it to the athlete that then gets done. You know, we've got to start realising this isn't just one person that goes, oh, do you know what, I want to run faster.
Kelly, do we need lifetime bans?
Sport across the board has to help. Say again?
Do we need lifetime bans for people who are caught cheating?
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't cheat. You shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't even be kind of in your psyche to even think that that's a good way to go. If you take that risk, then sorry, you're out. You're cheating. It's like a law's been broken. You know, I'd like to say that most times you break a law, then something else happens. But in the real world, in the realistic world, that if you break a law and you go to jail, it should be exactly the same thing. You know, your life sentence is a sentence, or a sentence is a sentence. And if you're in sport and you take those risks, then you should be out of that sport.
Text 51552. Game on. Weekdays from 6.
That was Kelly Holmes there speaking to us earlier, and very strong about the punishment for people who decide to dope and cheat in their sport. Lifetime bans. What do you think, Ruby?
I probably agree. I think there are substances like recreational drugs where people can get caught once, but I think knowingly taking a drug to enhance your performance, yeah, if you're going to stamp it out, it does have to be a lifetime ban. And I'm just trying to think here in horse racing terms. I know when there was the big scandal in England with the Godolphin trainer and the steroids in the horses, he got 15 years, which is life if you're talking about prison, isn't it? I can't even think of his name, and the other Godolphin trainer's on the tip of my tongue, so I'm not going to say that. But
please don't.
No, I'm not. He got 15 years, but like, I think that's probably an appropriate ban for taking steroids or performance enhancing drugs.
Well, whatever they're doing now, it isn't really working, because we still have people cheating all the time. So,
and I think the disappointing thing is when you see a cheat come back and win again, isn't it? That's when it really sticks out. But I think. Unfortunately, athletics is held up to a different account. We were chatting about it there, but I think
all sports should be held to a really high account.
All sports, and it needs to be across all.
I agree. Okay, guys, we are going to speak hurling now, because
Marie is getting her GAA fix.
I'm easing it all in slowly before Christmas comes, because after Christmas we're going to be starting the league, and it is going to
when
come thick
start?
And fast sometime in the end of January.
Give them some off time now, though. You know what I mean? Just leave them.
No, the O'Byrne Cup is very important.
Don't.
I'm getting you into it, lads.
Okay, fair enough.
Getting you easily into it. Shane, are you excited about the GAA season coming back?
No, can't get excited until Santi comes, Marie.
Yes.
And we start getting excited in.
Good man, so, Shane.
No, Shane McGrath, I'm
disappointed. No GAA excitement until Santi comes.
Well done, Shane. You're on our side of the fence over here. Well done.
We'll
call you again.
You're gossip.
I could just hang up on you right now if I wanted to, Shane.
No, I tell you, no, we can't. The boys are right. And I mean, like, you know, as I was saying to someone earlier on, I mean, Tip don't get starting to get excited about the hurling until around June or July anyway. So we're fine. Like, we'll get excited when we need to get excited. So
that's such a Tip thing to say.
No. To be fair, Shane, I used to love it when the rugby would start fading out of the paper. So it was down to maybe a page and it was all hurling, football. You were like, oh, nice one. It's their time to take all the flack. So I think we should
I used to love when racing got a page in the paper. Not faded down to a page, Donica. Oh,
all
your
the other,
ego.
All
oh
the other
God.
Jockeys must have been raging, because there's probably Ruby's picture in every single report.
See, that's you over there with your Claire head, you know, all jealous. Because Claire didn't get a mention in years, and Shane O'Donnell won the All-Ireland.
Sorry, Shane, we're veering off.
No, you talk away, let's go on. I'll just
we have you on the line because we want to talk about the potential introduction of yellow slitters for the 2020 Championship. It's a perfect story for December. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think there's a time and a place for everything. Like Dunnick's red wife runs there. I mean, the time and the place probably wasn't in the middle of a Heineken Cup game. But look, I think the Ellis Litters, well, they were definitely image enhancing. They mightn't have been performance enhancing. They were definitely image enhancing for Dunnick after
move
that.
Move
anyway.
On, Shane, will you? Come on.
Hey, move on. But anyway, I think there's a time and a place for the Ellis Litters. And I think the time and the place is, you know, if a hurling game is playing under lights, if the conditions are really foggy, you take the last year, like when Limerick played Tip there, even this year, sorry, in the league inside the Gaelic grounds, and you know you couldn't see 6 inches in front of your face. I mean, there's a time for a yellow slater there, or if the conditions were kind of snowy and if the game went ahead. But like for me, first of all, I don't think hurling should be played under lights. I think it's, you know, it's the fastest, one of the fastest, not the fastest field game in the world. So that's the only reason I could see the yellow slater. I'm just a traditionalist here. I don't know. Tennis changed it back in 1986. That was for TV reasons, but I mean, Roger Federer serving the ball at, like, I think it was reading about some like 140, 145 miles an hour, and like in a hurling in, the ball is probably travelling around 94, 95 miles an hour. So, you know, I mean, there's a difference in the speed of the ball, but like, I just feel that it's not broken. Why do we have to fix it? And I was chatting to someone today about, you know, and just wouldn't it be hilarious, like, I see that the slitters are going to have to be scanned by an app. And like, can you imagine 1 minute's going all in a final, a goalkeeper wants to take a quick puck out, turns around to the umpire and he goes, oh, hold on now, I'll have to scan this with the app now. Oh, actually, my battery's gone. Tommy, is your battery working there on the other side? We might be able to scan this ball here between us. I mean, it could be just absolute chaos now. And I know there's 8 years of research gone into it, but I don't know. I'm just a traditionalist hat on me here. I just say just leave the white slitters. Just keep them. I think they're doing fine.
Okay, tell us this about the yellow slitter. Bar the colour, is there any difference with it? Like, why do you need to scan it with an app?
Well, like, I suppose they're reading about it, like, Dunica, there was two reasons. Like, they said the first one was, you know, they're kind of going down the human rights road in that they want to eliminate child labour. And we know that a lot of the slitters are made, you know, maybe, you know, in the Far East and place like this. Okay, that's fair enough. That's a good one. But the other one was that they want this bona fide ball where all the balls have the same integrity, so that if the Cork lads are using for all the world an All-Star slitter and the Tip lads are using an Owen Kelly slitter, well, there's a difference maybe in the distance those balls can travel. And they just want every slitter to be the same. But I just feel that, you know, if you're a really competitive team and you've got really good guys involved in your background, you're going to find a way of getting around this as well. Like, you know, I mean, if it does come down to that. But they all want the slitters to be, because the yellow slitters, they'll have this chip in them, they can be scanned, and that every ball will be scanned and every ball will be the exact same ball. Every team is using the same ball, so there's no advantage of, you know, Galway having a different ball than the Wexford lads for all the world. So that's what they're saying. And I know they've 8 years of research gone into it there with the Greenfields Digital Sports Technology group down in Kilkenny. So I think definitely trial it. I think we have to, you know, adapt to change. If change is there, we have to adapt to it. Definitely trial it in the league, in the games under lights, in the more, you know, heavy weather conditions. But for me, I just still feel that we're going to be using the white slitter in championship, because this idea was thrown up 2 years ago as well and it didn't come true, like, so.
And could you put a chip in the white slitters to make sure they're all the same, seeing as you're all into taking a little bit of an advantage for yourselves there?
Yeah, they could, I suppose, but they haven't done it yet, so I don't know how they're going to do it now, Ruby, like, you know. But I just think it'd be very, very hard to police it. Like, as I said, I mean, can you imagine the battery's gone in the iPhone? Can't scan this slitter now. Hold on now 2 minutes before you take this puck out here.
Shane, so, there has been some controversies surrounding slitters and the ones teamed use, and a few of them going missing at times. Can you remind us of a few of the controversies?
Well, sure, your own county, I suppose, Marie, were involved in a controversy.
Well done,
there.
Shane, yeah. Was, of course, well, there were.
There was a bag. There was a bag of balls went missing there. One of the matches, I think. So
tracking devices in them next.
Yeah, this is it. Like, yeah, you know, sure, that's it. Like, I mean, the golf crowd are going to have to come on to this if it does work. That, you know, if the balls start going missing in the ditches, you could just, you know, like, you press a button when you lose the car keys or something and it starts beeping. That would be some multi-million dollar company there if you could, a golf ball that beeps when you lose it, maybe. So,
well, there's a way.
There can be, I suppose, keep it on the fairway, Ruby. I suppose it's probably the easiest thing to do.
Or keep another one in your pocket.
Absolutely, but I don't know. I mean, like, there is controversies. I remember 1 year Owen Kelly telling me that he went to take a penalty against Cork, and lovely slitters the whole way during the match. And next thing, he got a penalty against Cork, and suddenly Don Logue produced this litter, and it could only be described as something that maybe was after spending the last 3 to 5 years in a bog somewhere. And he just could barely rise the ball, let alone try and hit it. So they're all just advantages that people use. Like, but I just think it's going to be very hard police, because I think people will find ways and means of getting around it. Like, you know,
Shane, whatever about the players, and of course it's all about them. But I was at the Galway Limerick All Ireland final, and I know I'm not up to speed on, but I found it really hard to see the ball at times. Would it make it easier for the supporters?
Well, I suppose that's what they did with the tennis. That's what they did with the tennis, Dunica. Like, as you say, like in 86, they changed from a white ball to a yellow ball for the reasons that people could find it hard to see the white ball on TV. But, like, I mean, baseball, there you go again. Like, the speed that a baseball travels at, and those balls are white, and, you know, people manage to kind of keep their eye on them as well if you want to. You just kind of have to catch up to the speed of the game, Dunica. You're going to have to start going to more hurling matches with Marie. Like,
exactly, exactly.
Okay, and I'll do that. But honestly, isn't that of interest, though? If Joe Canney and, say, Shane McCannlan were knocking balls around at over 100 miles per hour, if that information could get back on, you know, if you could see that on the screen, or... I'd love that.
I know. Yeah, but like, who? Like, I just don't know who. Like, who's it benefiting? Like, I mean, is it really going to benefit the player to know how fast he hit the ball? I don't know. Like, he's probably going to strike the ball the same the next day anyway. I mean, stats are great, but I think they can go too far as well, in my opinion. Like, I mean, if the ball is going over the bar, it's still worth a point, regardless of the speed you're hitting it at, or, like, you know. Christy Ring was saying something, if you change the colour of the ball, they might be able to see it a bit better when it's going past them. Like, so, you know, that's... I don't know, like, Dunica, to be honest.
Shane, there's a school of thought out there as well that the slitter should be heavier. What do you think of that?
Yeah, but, like, I mean, there we go again. Like, are we saying it should be heavier because maybe the players are more skillful now? Like, I mean... okay, like... maybe the old school hurlers might say, you know, you'd rarely see anyone scoring from 80 yards and all this. But, I mean, John Fenton caught that ball fair sweet, and he was about 50, 55, 60 yards out off the ground when he scored that unbelievable goal. So maybe just, you know, maybe we just have more John Fentons now. Maybe we have more skillful hurlers. Maybe, you know, obviously the style of the hurley people are using now as well, it's a bigger boss. You're going to get a sweeter strike off the ball. I mean, it's not the player's fault nowadays that 60 years ago people weren't using the big boss, because everybody just used the one-size boss. I mean, the first person to go off in a solo run, I think it was a Mick Mackey or someone like that. I mean, they actually went on a solo run with the ball. I mean, just because, you know, he was just so skillful and decided to do this. But nowadays it's par for the course that this is going on. I just feel like are we punishing the skill of the players now that they can hit the ball 100 yards? Like, I wouldn't agree with that personally, Marie. I think, you know, just the game is in a good place. I mean, it's not exactly that hurling is boring or it's slow tempo or anything like that. Far from it. I mean, you go back 2 years, even last year, like, I mean, some of the games, the All-Ireland semi-finals replays, it was just phenomenal. And even this year, to a lesser extent, I suppose, the games as well, you know, whereas they weren't a high quality, it was still very exciting. But I mean, just don't punish players for being more skillful and, you know, having maybe better tools to work with, like in regards to hurleys and stuff like that.
Here, here. I agree. Anyway. I agree with you, Shane. Thanks for coming on and backing up the yellow slitters, or not actually. Thanks a million.
I don't have any investments made in the yellow slitters yet, but if they go well, we never know. Like,
thanks, Shane. Talk to you soon. That is expected to get official approval at Central Council next month. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll have the latest on the FAI.
FM. Game on 2FM.
With Gillette, new SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Now to the shortlist for the RTE Sport Manager of the Year nominees. Are you excited, guys? You don't look very excited.
It's a sort of a one-horse race, like, but crack on and get excited there if you so wish.
Can we go back to the yellow slitters?
We have also have the shortlist for the sports team of the year. So I am going to give you some of the names on the manager list.
And then you'd call out Jim Gavin and we'd go, well done.
Surprise, surprise.
I'd just like to, first of all, point out that there's no rugby managers on this, Dunica.
All right, back in my box.
I'll just give you a couple of names that might be of interest because there's quite a few to get through. Joseph O'Brien.
in a super year. Like, he's 26, Breeders' Cup winner, first fella to ride and train one, and whatever else he achieved during the year. But Marie, whatever way we dress this up and dress it down for manager of the year, one fella has managed to get it, and one team to win a fifth All-Ireland in a row that no one else has ever achieved. So
we're just wasting our time even talking about it, lads, is what you're trying to say.
I'd put it this way, I'd say the betting is fairly short in Jim Gavin's favour.
Yes.
Well, who knows, it's not a voting competition this year anyway, so it should be fairly clear cut. Vinnie Perth, the Dundalk manager, is also on it.
Liam Sheedy,
Mick Joseph Bowen,
O'Brien, Carl Murray, Ross Eminem, Ross, sorry, now I can't pronounce that, Enemit, isn't it?
Yeah,
boxing trainer.
Look at that, Jim Gavin's there.
Imagine. Carl Murray.
Carl Murray. Well, how about the team of the year then?
Team
are
of the year.
Footballers just nailed on.
Surely
Jim
the
Gavin?
Rugby players are here now.
This one is wouldn't be as nailed on, I'd say.
No, the women's hockey team,
yeah.
Show jumping team, Team Tiger Roll. Yeah, that could be a fair one, winning his second Grand National.
Team, yep. Tiger Roll.
Yeah.
What do you think, Donegan?
Jockey trainer, two jockeys, Keith Donoghue and Davy Russell, Gordon Elliott, Michael O'Leary.
Tip hurlers are there.
Yeah. Galway Camogie team.
The Ireland funny hockey feeling, there's going to be a lot of blue ribbons on these trophies.
You're spoiling it now.
We're not
spoiling it. We're just
look. To be fair to you, it is a shortlist, but like, there's only one winner, isn't there?
Well, I mean, I think now if you were the Dublin Footballers or Jim Gavin, you'd be fairly disappointed if you didn't get it.
Yeah, true.
Okay, guys, as the FAI saga continues, lots of people are coming out having their say and giving their take on it tonight on RTE before the Liverpool game. Richie Sadlier and Liam Brady told us what they think.
The association has today turned down the chance to appear before the Oireachtas Committee on Sport tomorrow. And Richie, first of all, to you, what is your reaction to that? It seemed that a delegation from the FAI were all set to appear and they have declined that offer today.
Yeah, for those that don't know, the FAI said on Friday and again on Sunday they stated their availability and their commitment to show up and speak with the Oireachtas Committee. And like so many examples before, there's yet again a mismatch between the stated intentions of the FAI and their actions. I mean, I would have known, and most people in Irish football would be aware of the culture of silence and fear and intimidation throughout Irish football. It's impacted how people within the FAI have conducted themselves. It's certainly impacted how the media have reported on Irish football for a long, long time. But the details that have come out in the last week are staggering. Like, we now know that the FAI withheld key transactions and contracts from their auditors. They released accounts which bear no resemblance to the reality of their financial situation. They withheld all those details from Sport Ireland. The people who were in charge of Irish football, whose job it was to develop the game, have basically left the place in ruins. John Delaney and the board, that's their legacy at the moment. So we, at the moment, as it stands, my sense is we still don't know how bleak this scenario is. I think there's still more details to come out. So trying to measure the true impact of what's gone on or what Irish football is going to look like for the coming years, I think is still, we're in no position yet to fully understand.
Liam, what's your take on what we have found out since Friday?
Well, I think Richie used the right word. It's staggering, isn't it? It's scandalous. It's despicable what's going on. And the football community in Ireland deserved a hell of a lot better. They were allowed the CEO, John Delaney, become a law unto himself, and they just never questioned him. They just never made him accountable. And let's face it, they're the board. He's an employee of the board, and they just never asked any serious questions at all, because he ruled with an iron fist. He hand-chose the people surrounding him, and it just went on and on and on. And if you go back to the Aviva Stadium, you know, and the debacle of the season tickets. Well, any other CEO would probably lost his job in any other important company after how badly misjudged that was. And that really was the start of our finances, the FAI finances, becoming a terrible way, into a terrible state. And they just never held them accountable. And what amazes me is that these people are having an input going forward on decisions, which I think they should no way should be involved in. I think the minister, Shane Ross, has said so. But
what we also know as well is John Delaney, with a straight face, told the AGM last summer, as recently as last summer, that the option or the choice was the word he used, of being debt-free by next year was still available to the FAI. We now know that's a contemptible claim.
On 2FM. With Gillette, new skin guard sensitive with unique skin guard technology taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Say bye to shave irritation. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Welcome back to Game On. If you're a Liverpool fan, Mane has just got booked and Salah has missed two really good chances, Marie. I'm not so sure is Klopp so happy that he has him on the pitch now.
Gosh, it's just from watching it seems that it's end-to-end stuff, Ruby.
It is very end-to-end. What do you think, Mark?
We don't have Mark, I'm afraid.
That said, do a light show.
Brilliant. Oh, we do have Mark. Okay.
Hi. Hey. Yeah, I mean, what a chaotic start to this second half. We've seen chances again at both ends at the moment. Lovren is down injured, which will be of a concern to Jurgen Klopp because, of course, he was struggling to make this game anyway. In fact, it was a bit of a surprise that he travelled. But, this game, I know, I've been saying it all the time I've been on. I just can't believe it's 0-0. So many chances created. In this second half, Salzburg have got to open up. They've got to attack. They need to win the game. Napoli are well clear against Genk, so there should be opportunities for Liverpool on the counter attack. That injury to Lovren, he's not going to be able to carry on. It's a real big game tonight now for Joe Gomez, who's just about to come on for Dejan Lovren. Of course, Matip is already sidelined. So this is probably now Liverpool's sort of third or fourth choice centre back coming on, and I don't think Gomez has looked as good this season as what he did before his injury. So big test for him in this last half an hour.
Are we heading into potential crisis when you think of the fixtures that are coming down the track for Liverpool, injury crisis?
Yes, I suppose it's not ideal because they're getting these injuries in the same position, and it tends to be, the less recovery time for these athletes is when they kind of pick up the injuries. And it was always a risk, I think, to play Lovren tonight. And I think when you speak to footballers, they normally say they're not 100, that they're very rarely 100% fit. They're always playing with little niggles, but and that is why they get rotated out. And often fans wondering, why is Sancho not playing this week? And it's because they get into these situations when they enter sort of the red zone where, you're more likely to pick up an injury. And I think that's probably what's happened to Dejan Lovren tonight.
We saw that Jurgen Klopp has picked a really strong side to head to Qatar next week for the Club World Cup. Do you think that it's a competition that Klopp wants to win?
It's a really strange competition because it's got the most illustrious kind of title, to be the world club champions, and yet teams from Europe, particularly those that have gone as champions sort of from England, have tended not to be that fussed whether they win or lose, and it's more moaning that it could potentially winning this trophy.
We have lost Mark. Ruby, we've give us an update.
I wonder, is Mark going to Qatar? It's still nil all here, Liverpool and Salzburg. You're going to Qatar, Marie, are you?
I'm going to Qatar, yeah.
Will you take a call?
I'll take a call. I absolutely will.
Brilliant.
Live from the match.
I'm not sure that the time will be the same here. Like, will you be on air when I'm at the match? But I might take a call from my sun lounger.
Oh, that's killer,
isn't it?
What about the other
before Christmas? It's lashing rain outside. There's people driving home in the rain and the wind, and you're talking about your tan, getting a tan.
What about the other game tonight, Ruby?
The other games tonight, Ajax and Valencia. Well, Ajax are obviously a very free-scoring team, and I think should be too good for Valencia. We'll see what Mark says when we come get us back on the phone. Benfica are playing Zenit. Borussia Dortmund against Slavia Prague. I would probably be for Dortmund, seeing as they're 3-1 on, so that's not original. Inter and Barcelona, Mark discussed earlier. Inter are sure priced to beat Barcelona. Lyon and Leipzig. That's probably a competitive one. Lyon have lost only 4 of their last 17 home European games. Both teams have scored in 5 of Lyon's last 6 home Champions League fixtures, so that'll be an open game. And obviously in Napoli and Genk, Napoli are already 3-0 up there.
Napoli are 3-0 up. Let's see if we can find out who scored on that, and we will come back to it in a second after I read out some of these mascot texts, because we have the answers that ye wanted. The first one is,
I was a mascot for Ireland versus Poland. Our club, St. Pat's Boys, Carlo, were asked by the FAI, and that's from Dean Lewis.
Yeah, I was at the Munster match in Thomond, and Noah Crowley was a mascot, and you should have seen him after the game. He was just on air. It's just amazing when you do it. There was another little boy, Richie Walsh, just means so much to people, and it does give you a bit of a lift.
Okay, we have Mark Langdon back. Mark, we have a goal, tell us.
Yes, we do. I think it had been coming. It's Liverpool that have scored the goal, and it's a former Salzburg player that's got it. Naby Keita with a header into an empty net. Liverpool fans celebrate wildly. They know that goal, you know, could be the one that takes them through to the knockout stages. They've had their moments in terms of, you know, some nervy moments defending, but Trent Alexander swept the ball out to the other fullback. Robertson, how many times have we seen that? Then there was some brilliant play by Mane down the wing, and it was left with Keita to head into an empty net. Of course, Keita used to play for Salzburg, as did Mane, and the two of them have combined, and Keita held up his hands into almost apology. Didn't want to celebrate the goal too wildly, but it's a massive moment for Liverpool in this Champions League campaign.
It appears, just from watching Liverpool, that Klopp has a system where any of the 11 players, nearly including Alisson, can get involved in the setup or the assisting or in the scoring of a goal.
Yeah, it is. And I think the fullbacks have been just phenomenal, really, you know, for Liverpool. And both were involved in that goal. And I think that goes to show sort of the enterprising way that they played. That sort of long-ranging ball from Trent Alexander-Arnold, who has got the kind of technique, really, to play in midfield. You sometimes wonder if he's wasted at right back. A fantastic ball out to Robertson, who's full of industry and, you know, hard-running ability. And then the rotation of the front three, as we see the, now at Salah, goes around the goalkeeper and has knocked it in for two. A brilliant goal from Mohamed Salah from a very tight angle. This should be now the game wrapped up for Liverpool. A brilliant couple of minutes. And as you just mentioned, the goals can come from everywhere. Salah starts out on the right wing, then goes through the middle, went round the goalkeeper, Stankovic, and it was such a tight angle that he's managed to curl one in then into the bottom corner.
Liverpool have taken a couple of players from Salzburg, but I doubt very much they'd be taking that Salzburg keeper having watched those last two goals.
Don't be too harsh.
Oh, he's a fault for both, surely.
He got caught out of goal. It's going to be a tight one on VAR in terms of offside, hopefully, from a Liverpool fan's point of view.
For the Salzburg keeper.
Yeah, also not the best defending. I think that the goalkeeper would maybe point to the fact that the defender's header was a little bit short, but certainly the goalkeeper, Stankovic, was caught in no man's land eventually. But still, from the tightest of angles, I still wouldn't want to take too much away from the actual finish of Salah. Tremendous pace and then a brilliant finish. And it looks like that goal has been given, so Liverpool about to go 2-0 up.
I know we always have huge expectations of Mo Salah, and he's had a bit of an up and down time this season. Two goals now in the last couple of games. Is he back, Mark?
Yeah, was he ever away? I think you're right. We do, because of his goal scoring exploits over the last couple of years, I think sort of every time he goes two or three matches without a goal, it's sort of seen as a mini crisis, really. And it's the same for Harry Kane or, you know, Bayern Munich's Lewandowski. He hasn't scored in three matches now, and people are wondering sort of when that drought's going to end. We do judge them so harshly because they're so brilliant, really. But I think that Salah's about much more than goals. That front three is a combination that works brilliantly. And you know, it's the rotation of them. Mane can pop up in all the positions, as can Salah. Firmino drops deep, and I think when you take one of them out, and I know that Divock Origi has done well in his substitute appearances, but I don't think the Liverpool team plays as well when you kind of when one of them's not playing. So even if Salah's not scoring, I think he's contributing, and we've seen with that goal he's sort of played more through the middle in this second half, and it certainly paid dividends.
Right, Mark, those two early kickoffs both look done and dusted. So elsewhere tonight, you've Ajax and Valencia. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, I mean, this is I think it's going to be a thrilling game, really, because both teams will assume that they need to pick up a positive result because Chelsea are likely to beat Lille. I'll go for Ajax, although it may be sort of a high-scoring game where it's late on that Ajax's quality begins to show. Valencia have got quite a lot of injuries and suspensions tonight. That could be the sort of pivotal difference between the two teams.
And obviously Benfica are favourites to beat Zenit, but Benfica have won just 3 of their last 18 matches in the Champions League. Can they turn that around?
Yeah, I mean, Russian teams, in terms of Zenit, don't tend to travel brilliantly, but I think that Zenit are being a little bit sort of unfairly written off for this game. Benfica can't qualify for the last 16 of the Champions League. I'm sure that they'd like to try to make it through to the Europa League, but I've been quite impressed with Zenit, and up front, Juba and Azmoun are two players, absolute giants, sort of a throwback, really. I mean, in this world where we see a lot of the smaller players sort of grabbing all the attention, these are two big target men that they've got a lot of attacking qualities in it, so wouldn't be surprised if there was a little upset there.
And Dortmund have scored 92 goals in their last 32 home games. They'll surely beat Slavia Prague.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Slavia really unlucky to be out of the competition. They played well against Barcelona and Inter and Dortmund, but it's those sort of the final details in both boxes they've just been found wanting. Dortmund refound their form in the last couple of weeks. Jadon Sancho got a couple of goals at the weekend, sort of quiet and talk of him leaving for the Premier League in January. So I think Dortmund should be able to get the job done. And you mentioned how many goals they've scored at home. Usually that home crowd are just, you know, are like the 12th man for Dortmund quite often in these big European nights.
And Lyon and Leipzig. Leipzig have been struggling to keep clean sheets, just 2 in their last 14 games.
Yeah, well, the thing with Leipzig is that they're from the same factory, if you like, as Salzburg, both owned by Red Bull. And what tends to happen is that they start at Salzburg, then they go to Leipzig, and then they're sold on, you know, for a load of money to say, a Premier League team like Naby Keita, for instance. So they've got a lot of good players. They like to play attacking football. They've already qualified, which I think could mean that Lyon have got a good opportunity to win the game and join them in the last 16. Lyon haven't been good enough this season, it has to be said, but this is a really big game. I'm expecting their sort of top talents like Memphis Depay to turn up when it really matters.
Mark, thanks a million. Enjoy the last 27 minutes of the Liverpool game.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. We certainly will enjoy it because there's been some goals, so we're happy. We have another text in. Hi all, my granddaughter Caoimhe McCall was the mascot for the opening game of the season with Liverpool, and she was picked by being a member of the supporters club. It's a chance in a million. Her very proud nanny, Mary McCall from Cove in County Cork. Wow, that's a pretty amazing one. Liverpool mascot.
It's amazing.
It's out there, isn't it?
Her nan Liverpool texts in for fair play to her.
Monster, Liverpool, monster.
Mary and Cove, you beauty.
Now guys, continuing to on our earlier chat with Kelly Holmes, I put to her that it's been a long time since she's competed on the track and asked her, how's life been since?
Yes, it is a long time ago. It's surprising how time flies, isn't it? But so basically what I do now is I do motivational speaking. I stand on stage talking about my career, and actually what I find as time has gone on, and I find quite incredible, is it's flipped from being about, it's not really about the athletics anymore. The athletics and the achievement is the inspiration behind my talk. However, actually the talk is about the journey. And that's what I found quite fascinating, how as time goes on, you reevaluate what you've done, and actually to get a really positive message across, it's really about the journey.
There's some incredible messages with your story and what you've gone through. But just for yourself, Kelly, do you miss competing? Do you miss being on the line and that moment where, you know, it's just you and all the training, all the work you've done to that point? That's what matters.
I think there's two things. I think if you could pick me up and make me be as good as I was in Athens and any other time I've won a race or got a personal best and it felt brilliant and, you know, you get that moment, then yeah, absolutely. Because I don't think anything in life really captures what sport can capture in those moments. However, the training, the dedication, I really miss probably structure more than anything. I don't miss that competitive edge. I don't miss the, I'm still competitive. I don't miss the journey in the sense of what it took to be totally at your best and trying to be at your best year on year on year on year because of that part. So I don't miss that, but I think I miss structure. You know, as a sports person, you kind of know what's expected of you, what you're going to do in the day. You know, it's quite simple.
Yeah.
And I think actually life is tougher now and not having that bit. But I still, you know, keep fit and I go to park runs, but I probably need now just a challenge, let's say, more than I need to be an international athlete anymore.
So everyone looks at 2004 and the big smile on your face when you did double gold, but you might explain to us the sacrifices that go into that moment, because, you know, for everyone, they see you there and think, I'd love to do that, but they don't realise the journey.
No, and that's the thing. So people will see the picture and they will see the glory, and in sport you see the tears, and they could be tears of sorrow over not getting your best performance, or tears of joy, but they don't see that journey. No, and for me personally, that's what I feel is the most, I'd have to say, the most credible part possibly of mine, is that, you know, I went through, as it's very widely spread and I will talk about when I come over, about having a really massive breakdown when I was 33, a year before the Olympic Games, and becoming a self-harmer, depression, all those things that you just wouldn't even know that they're going to come because they come out of the blue. And also for me personally, you know, I was a military girl, a 12-year international athlete by then, and that's the proof that, you know, we're all human and not superhuman, which people sometimes put sports people on this pedestal, which is not correct. We are human beings who go through a journey trying to be the best version of ourselves, and at some point maybe there's a breaking point, and I had mine. But equally, I have to say, there's a long time journey of that, I think. You know, there's a long process of getting to the stage that I did, that maybe I didn't understand or really recognise at the time, because you're so blinkered sometimes of trying just to reach your full potential. You maybe don't look at yourself enough along that journey and actually evaluate that, you know, you're not in a good place. You just kind of battle through it.
Kelly, one thing that really struck me when I was reading about you was that you self-harmed and you covered it up, but you were still able to perform and do well on the track during that difficult time. How did you manage to do that?
Well, this is it, you know. I mean, I think resilience is like a word that we sometimes either, we hear a lot of now, but we maybe don't take really important. You know, resilience is really, really key. I, you know, at my worst time when this all first happened, I was also getting ready for World Championships in Paris. And within that period of time, I ended up getting a silver medal, standing on the track, and no one knew what was happening. And I was covering up the scars and the blood. And, you know, when you're wearing a crop top and shorts, it's not a lot of place you can hide, or you do hide with makeup. However, when one side sort of almost dying and not wanting to live, which was like my thought at that time, and still having a dream was so important to me. And I can't underestimate and can't sort of clarify enough that having a powerful dream and a vision can really, really help you move in all different directions and try to, you know, reach that best. And I had that, you know, I always believed, I do not know why it was so powerful, but always believed I could be Olympic champion since I was 14. And those highs and lows, I think, are what made me achieve what I achieved, not just the fact that I was talented. I do believe in fate. I think that we have a journey, and I believe that the journey was there set to try me. And if I'd given up, I would never, ever have achieved, would I? But I didn't. And I think that, for me, was the resilience I had.
Kelly, off the track, and since you've retired, you have achieved an extraordinary amount as well. And one of the things that you've done is you've made the conversation about mental health just a normal conversation to have. Was that a conscious decision you made to try and raise awareness about mental health?
So when I started to talk about it in 2005, I wrote my autobiography and I put it in there because I thought, well, you know, what's the story really? The story is actually about perseverance, never giving up and all of that. So I put that in, and then really there was the conversations only, I think, in the last couple of years. I mean, when I went on a TV show in England, I was talking about this because it started to become a topic of conversation, and everyone was sort of a little bit shocked. And I said, no, the difference is that I've been talking about this for years, but people are listening now. And I think my platform allows me to be able to promote the need to talk openly, honestly, and give people that reason to live because they can get help. And I believe in normalizing conversation around this so that actually it doesn't destigmatize anymore. And I think the biggest thing that I always say is that having a mental health problem doesn't define you. It's part of you. You define yourself, and you then maybe need to find help and assistance. And I think it's important for me with that platform. It wasn't a conscious decision to do this. It's just been part of being open and more honest, and actually probably a little bit more comfortable in myself that I can go on stage and talk authentically, but honestly about this, so that people can see a high achiever, but also somebody that might have struggled.
And listening to your brilliant podcast with Alistair Campbell, just for someone that might be struggling with mental health, for you, like Marie said there too, you know, like everyone's looked to you for years as a role model, but if someone is struggling, to hear that, you know, someone that's achieved so much can feel like this, yeah. it makes it a real conversation.
Yeah, so I did the podcast. I was so fascinated by doing the podcast because obviously I got to speak to some really sort of great people in their own industries. And Alistair Campbell, you mentioned, that was actually quite funny. That was my first one. And we ended up sitting in his bathroom, me sitting on his toilet while he's playing the bagpipes, which was not what was in my vision when I first started this journey.
Yeah.
But what was great about that and some of the messages that I got through, and him being one of the people in particular, he was really struggling the morning that I come, and I didn't know this at the time, and we went through the interview, and he just said to me, Kelly, thank you so much for coming today, because I may not have got out of bed. And it just really struck me that actually each day people are struggling, and you just don't see it because it's hidden behind the job that people do, you know, the work that they have to undertake, the name that they have. And actually that's not what life is about. And so for me to be able to have the opportunity to speak with people that quite frankly have done well in their own careers, but along the way have had a really battling time, but it was so nice to have open conversation so that hopefully people that listen can actually resonate or go, do you know what, I'm not alone.
Kelly, thanks a million for joining us. I know you're coming to Dublin soon, tell us why.
Yeah, so I'm coming for the Pendulum Summit. I'm really looking forward to it because I think it's a great summit that has some really good thought leaders in their own industries and about motivating people, getting the best self-belief, sort of mental wellness, all of those things that are around people achieving highly. And I'm really looking forward. I'm, you know, really privileged to be on that list of speakers. I looked on it. I think I've got to up my game. So I'm going to come with the Olympic spirit and Olympic head on and try and be the best speaker I can be when I get over there.
Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
You're
so inspirational, not only on the track watching you for years, but I'm sure there will be people heading to the Pendulum Summit that will take an awful lot from your words, and we look forward to seeing you in Ireland soon.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Welcome back to Game On. As you can hear, we have Greg and Gary in the studio. Liverpool are still winning 2-0, 75 minutes gone. James Milner has just come on for Roberto Firmino. But before we talk golf, there was a conversation in the studio last week. Gary DeMarie wants to talk to you about.
All right.
It was our parenting chat, Gary. We had a really great reaction to it. Lots of people were invested in what we were talking about. And I saw from Twitter that you were listening.
I was. I feel quite strongly about it. I think there's a huge problem in sport at the moment with the thoughts of professionalism. I think no matter what level or what promise a boy or a girl show at a young age, there seems to be this conversation about going down a professional route. I think we've totally lost the art of letting kids play sport and let them enjoy their sport. I think there's an epidemic as well of overbearing parents, and that's something that really needs to be addressed. The problem with that is it happens to coaches in the coalface with junior teams and whatever, mams and dads are screaming on the sideline, and I think there's a huge problem with it. I was only talking about a kid the other day who's a really good young golfer, and someone said to me, will he make it? I was like, he's 17, like what's he going to make? Go home and make his dinner? Like it's just let them play their sport. I think there's, and we've seen it, you know, especially in Donegal sport and rugby, like the amount of people that stop playing rugby at when they get to a certain age, the amount of golfers now, it's now happening a lot in golf, the amount of young golfers get to 22, 23, 24 and stop playing. So I think it needs to be addressed massively.
Do you think you say overbearing parents? I think that a lot of that has come about with the fact that kids no longer go to matches or games on buses. Everyone is brought by a parent because of things that have gone on in the past, and now you have way more parents on the sideline giving their tuppence worth.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. I think that whole, you know, and there's another thing about around the team thing too. I grew up playing team sports and then went into an individual sport. I think there's an overplay as well of how important team sports are for kids too, because a lot of bullying as well goes on in these team sports too. So I wouldn't immediately think that you'd have to channel a child into a team sport. I think it is important as long as the environment is controlled. But that thing about the, you know, going away on the bus and having the crack with your friends, you know, whether you win the game, like, and I made a mistake this year with, we had our under-8 soccer team, you know, at the end of the season, and I said to the other coaches, who's the player of the year? And they're, oh, well, there's no player of the year, like, everyone gets a medal. You know, and I don't buy into that either. I understand it. I think it's good that they all feel they're involved. But I think to a certain extent as well, it's important to identify kids that have done well. Not necessarily the best player on the team, but maybe someone who trained the hardest. But you still have to have someone to look up to. It's not wrong that someone is better than all the others. Like, we can't all be the same. So trying to find that balance between, you know, having acceptance of everyone coming into play no matter what their level are, but there still are players that you have to aspire to be. No different to you. If you're, you know, as a jockey, you're the best, but people aspire to be like you. There's nothing wrong with that either. I just think there's a lot more thought goes into it, or needs to go into it, and I think this whole process-driven thing is in sport now, I think is a serious hindrance to kids just enjoying their sport.
I see it as a parent now. I mean, and I see Gillian more so than me even. Like, you couldn't be off the road.
Yeah, well, you're just a taxidermist.
Yeah, the amount of training. Everyone is training, and every sport competing with each other, and there's training and training and more training. What's wrong with just playing and a bit of fun? It's all practice and training.
But there needs to be more synergy as well. Like, we had a situation last year in where I live, outside Drogheda, where my daughter's under 12 soccer team had only 12 or 13 girls. So they were short pretty much on the team. And then the Gaelic team of 34 on the panel. Now, only 15 play. They don't need 34. What's wrong with, in a village club, you know, what's wrong with the clubs coming together? We don't need to compete against one another either, but there seems to be, now I know GAA is always going to be a little more popular, but I think there needs to be a little more joined up thinking within sports, because they can't compete against one another. It's never going to sustain, I think, if that happens.
What are we seeing in golf? You know, is it people putting their kids in to be the next Rory, the next Shane?
Yeah. I got an email off a guy a couple of weeks ago for, I won't mention his age, but he was very young, with the view to you know, being taught in a professional way to look, you know, and he was a lot less than 12. And I just can't get involved in a situation like that, because I just think it's morally wrong. Just let them play their sport. I had a 11 or 12 year old kid about 4 years ago, and his father asked me to write out a winter program of training for him. And he's 11 years of age. So I said to him, yeah, go play a bit of rugby, play a bit of soccer in the winter. But he didn't want to hear that, and I never heard from him since. But I think it's wrong the way the whole thing has been channeled down this let's be professional.
I don't know either. There's so many angles at it and so many ways of looking at it, and everybody would have a different opinion. But I agree with you. I think we're in a way turning kids off just having fun and playing sport for fun. But I even see it with swimming and the amount that my kids have to do in the swimming club, the amount of training, it's phenomenal.
And they don't play in the street anymore. That's a big thing as well. Like, and you see that, you look at one of our greatest ever soccer players, Robbie Keane, will always say he learned and harnessed all his skills being out on the street kicking the ball. Like, my young fellow, we live in a village. There's no kids in the area for him to just, you know, disappear and go off and kick ball. Like, that seems to be gone out of society nowadays, because, you know, parents are afraid to let their kids loose, or you always have to keep an eye on them. And I have two young children, and I totally understand that too. But if you could keep them in that fun environment, rather than it always has to be teams and you know, because you see with kids, especially the under-8s I'm involved in, you can see the kids that come to training that they don't kick a ball around with their dad or their mum. You can just see, like, some of them have been with us for 12 months and they still can't kick a ball. Whereas when I, you know, and I'm not being an old fuddy-duddy here, but when I was, you know, 30-odd years ago, or maybe even a bit more, maybe 40, you were just out and about kicking a ball the whole time, or in Kilkenny with the, you know, hurl or slitter or whatever it was. And that just seems to be, outside of certain pockets around the country, that seems to be gone out of society, which I think is part of the problem, because there's no doubt kids' motor skills now are certainly not what they used to be. They're sat at home on devices, and it's not good for their mental health, which is a big issue as well.
Speaking of team sports, this week in golf there is a huge team competition. The President's Cup gets underway on Thursday. It's probably been overshadowed a little bit though by events in the Bahamas during the week, guys.
What happened in the Bahamas, Ruby?
That Patrick Weed had an unfortunate encounter with some sand.
He did, yeah. And it's another, we had incidents the last kind of 18 months with Matt Kuchar. There was an incident in Germany with Matt Kuchar, and Patrick Reed, his behaviour was disgraceful last week. He got a 2-shot penalty, which unfortunately is all that they can do within the letter of the law, but I certainly would be a lot stronger on him. But there's no position to do anything more than what they just did.
Well, for those who haven't heard what happened, just to explain briefly, there was an incident in what's called a sand waste, which is not a bunker. It's an area of the golf course which is treated the same as if it was on grass or in the woods or whatever. The ball, where it was lying, wasn't lying very well in the sand waste bunker. It was in a depression, and Patrick Reed stepped in twice, had a couple of practice swings with the blade of his wedge very, very close to the ball. And on both of the practice swings, he did remove sand in front of the ball, which improved the lie of the ball. Nobody disputed that. Slugger White, the tournament referee, stepped in and slapped a 2-shot penalty on him, but didn't declare that there was any intention on Reed's part. And I think it's the element of intention which is the major question that everybody is wondering about.
Well, Patrick Reed was speaking about it, so we'll hear what he had to say.
Well, it's not the right word to use. Whenever you're out there, if you do something unintentionally that breaks a rule, it's not considered cheating. And at the end of the day, that's what it is. I mean, if you're intentionally trying to do something, then yes, that would be considered cheating, but I wasn't intentionally trying to improve a lie or anything like that. Because if I was, it would have been a pretty good lie and I would have been able to hit it really close. You know, afterwards, when I saw it and when I talked with Slugger, immediately both of us knew that it wasn't from intent or anything like that. And you know, if you intentionally try to do something, then it is considered cheating. But if you're not intentionally trying to give yourself a good lie or intentionally breaking a rule or something like that, that's not considered cheating. It's just considered a breach of rule.
Cameron Smith, who is playing for the rest of the world team, is that how you call it in the President's Cup?
Internationals.
Yeah. The Australian has come out hard against Patrick Reed and has even encouraged the whole crowd to boo him during the week. A bit Australian, but not really very golf, is it?
It's not really very golf.
They need all the help they can get, the international team, to be brutally honest. You know, no, it's not. But, yeah, Gary, I mean, obviously it's something that you must have played this game and you must have witnessed stuff like this.
Absolutely. I said it at a meeting when the European Tour went down the road of the fact that their players are going to participate in the Olympics and drug testing came into golf. We had a players' meeting in Abu Dhabi. And we had the doctor of the British Olympic team. She was became employed by the European Tour, so they're starting to drug test in golf. And basically, if you were found with a sample on something in your sample, you get banned for 12 months. You lose your status, your winning status, whatever it was. But my argument was, you catch a guy cheating on a golf course, and essentially it's a 2-shot penalty. It's what happened to Patrick Reed at the weekend. But everyone's brought up, and golf is one of the few sports left where it's self-policing and there's an honour system. You're brought up to play the ball as it lies, end of story, not to improve your lie. That's the number one rule of golf. It's different in the winter time when conditions are soft, or if you're playing in a course where conditions are soft and you have winter rules where you're allowed to place your ball or improve your lie. Other than that, you play the ball as it lies. And that is just what golf is all about. And if someone breaches that, I think it's unforgivable.
Like, what I can't understand is Patrick Reid surely knew doing what he was doing was improving his lie, and he was going to incur these penalties. How did he think he wouldn't incur them?
Some people might think that it's... There's certain pockets around... I think we're very fortunate here in Britain and Ireland where, you know, the game was founded in this area, and we were kind of brought up as that's the right way to play. There's certain pockets around the world, and I've encouraged that you get in different places where it's just not in their DNA that's how you play the game. And there's absolutely no doubt, like, people are stupid to think that there's not a lot of it going on, because there is. You know, there's many incidents, but the problem is it's such a grey area, and it's down to one guy is out playing with another guy. Now, because of TV evidence, but if one guy is out playing with another guy and he sees it, it's his word against the other guy, and it's very hard to actually properly nail someone on. Simon Dyson got nailed on it, and
yeah, he got nailed on pure real evidence that he was marking the ball a good 3 inches ahead of where it had been.
I know, but like, Patrick Reid's lie was a fried egg in a waste area. Like, it's, you walk in, the first thing you do as a player when you're hitting a golf shot is you look at the lie. The lie tells you what you can do with the shot. If you've got a good lie, you can hit the shot you want. If you don't, you have to adapt. When he went into that waste area, the number one thing, it's a poached egg. He can't get the golf ball properly onto his club face because the sand is in the way. He's put the club in behind it and he's dragged it back twice. And the only reason he's doing that is to try get the sand from behind the ball so he can get the club in at the ball. That's the number one rule of golf that he can't do. So whatever label or whatever name you put on it, that's what it is. And that's why it will continue to happen, because there's no, like, if I was the boss, I'd just airlift him off the course straight away. And that would be the end of it. But that's not the way things work.
I read Rory in the paper today, yeah, where he said he has witnessed things on a course and he would prefer to say to somebody in the locker room after, like, watch where you're marking your ball, or
just keep an eye on that. Yeah, but if you look at Rory McIlroy, what happened to him in the playoffs when he thought that he had done something in a bunker and he just turns around and immediately calls over an official. Now, he didn't get a penalty in the end, but it could have cost him the golf tournament. That's the other side of it. So, and you're playing against other guys, it's not a level playing pitch.
Does that go back to what you were saying in the first point, though, that where you learn to play the game maybe stands to you better?
There's absolutely no doubt about it. I think I had a very funny incident years ago. We were playing in Asia and I was playing an American guy with another American guy who was notorious for fudging the ball. And we're walking up the first fairway and the guy, the good guy, says to the other guy, "We're playing it down today, buddy." You know, jokingly, but making his point that, you know, we know the rules here and we're going to keep an eye on you. But it's unfair on the players to have to police themselves.
I thought that's what there was, referees in golf for at big tournaments. I actually thought they were kind of policing things.
Yeah, but this is the thing. The referee is coming on Patrick's side, totally on Patrick Reid's side. So all accusations, whatever they might be, they all come down to what the referee's decision is. And the referee's decision in this is final. There was no issue of intention as far as Lugger White was concerned.
He's totally bottled to that referee. I could guarantee if that was John Parmore or Andy McPhee from the European Tour, there's no way he'd have gotten away with a two-shot penalty.
What would he got?
They would have. I don't know what the exact rule is or what they can and can't do, but there is no way that they would have both been on the same page, because there's no way that Slugger White can understand what his intentions are, because the player knows better than anyone what's going on when you put a golf club in behind a golf ball, whether it's in a bunker or it's in the rough. The player knows better than anyone.
And so, also, I think it's going to be a case that Patrick Reid is going to pay the price for this for the rest of his career. These things linger. These are stigmas in golfers' careers. Whether, you know, there's a question mark over, you know, how he goes about his business on the golf course. Golf is an unforgiving sport in that regard.
Yeah, but until someone makes a big, you know, a big statement or a big decision, you know, that he's the Masters champion. The Masters is an invitational. So you can win 10 Masters, you still have to get invited back every year. Until someone makes a big statement, you know, and it's, I've always been, like, we had a funny situation at that meeting in Abu Dhabi where one of the guys who was losing his hair was putting a product into his hair to try get his, keep his hair grown or whatever, and found out that there was a certain chemical in this that would fail a test. So he's could have technically gotten banned for, you know, trying to fight his own baldness. You know, so where's the liner Obviously, I didn't take any of the product before you start.
Don't worry, Dunnick was using loads of it. Bottles of it there by the looks of them. Anyway, Patrick Reid is what it is, and he did what he did. But the President's Cup does start in a few hours' time, I think, with clock variations.
Yeah, it's tomorrow night. Thursday, sir. Well, yeah, Wednesday night for us. It should be a fascinating encounter. It's on probably one of the greatest golf courses that's ever been built in Royal Melbourne. It's the third time it's down there. They've only won it once, the internationals. The gap is huge. The golfing class, the internationals don't seem to be able to get that team environment going. The only time they've beaten them is in Royal Melbourne, but that was back in 98. But I just hope it's close. But I'd say Harrington will have a good bit of interest in it as well, because Steve Stricker's a vice captain, you know, and the pairings and how they shape up and all that sort of stuff. I'm sure Harrington will keep an eye on it too.
It's full time in Salzburg, by the way, and Liverpool have won 2-0. But I can see, I think looking at the international team, why it's so hard for them to unite. I mean, you look at the various nationalities involved and mm-hmm. the amount of languages involved.
Well, I don't think it matters too much about them. They're all playing individually, except, they're playing foursomes. It's not like a team room where you have a team chat beforehand about the team and their formation and all those type of things. Golf is essentially an individual sport. Even in foursomes and in four-ball play, it's completely still individual in many ways. Foursomes is the only scenario whereby there might be some chat or teamwork. But most of them speak enough English. They all play in the PGA Tour. And also, it's eight different countries, so it's a proper international team, which is great to see. No South Africans on it, which is...
Well, Louis, just one.
All right, I saw Louis. So, did I see Louis' name?
He is there, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Only one South African. It just shows you how much the international team has become an international team, except instead of being a team of Australians and South Africans predominantly as it used to be, which that shows, the Joaquin Neiman's of his world spreading it out to Chile. Yeah. Abraham Anser in Mexico. So look, it's a team which has got two members, this international team, ranked higher than the lowest member of the American team. And the American team has got 1, 2, 3, 4 members, 5 members from the world's top 10, more than half of them in the world's top 12. It's overwhelmingly stronger than the international team. But Royal Melbourne is a short golf course. It's probably one of the great golf courses of the world, especially the one that will unfold over the next few days, because it's a composite course of two 18-hole complexes in Royal Melbourne. So it's the best of two golf courses. On television, even if the golf is mediocre, I'm going to lap up one of the great golf courses in the world visually, because it is exactly that.
It's amazing. And Ernie's got the course record. He shot 60 around there. I actually, unfortunately, played in that tournament. And I played early on the Thursday. I shot 1 under, which is a decent start. And I teed off late in the Friday, and I was 17 behind Ernie when I was teeing off on the Friday. He was 18 under after 2 rounds, so he knows that course really well. But it's an amazing golf course. It really is.
And the American team slummed it all the way from the Bahamas to Sydney. Did you see the jet they went on?
No, I didn't, no.
Well, it's the PGA Tour on this event, so there'll be no expense spared.
It's not like they're stuck for a few bob. And the players don't get paid in the President's Cup, and the same as in the Ryder Cup. So there's plenty of money for a nice, comfortable jet.
Well, they fairly lapped it up. Google it or look it up online, because I doubt any of us will ever be on this thing. Guys, thanks a million. I hope the President's Cup, good watching for everybody else. We're going to take a break. FM.
That's the Frames. They're celebrating 30 years next year on June the 20th, 2020, on Saturday in the Royal Hospital, Kilmaine. We've been giving away a pair of tickets, which go on general release on the 13th of December at 10 o'clock. And our winner tonight is Niamh Lennon from Galway. Congrats, Niamh. Enjoy the gig.
So Liverpool have gone through as group winners with 13 points. Napoli, having won this evening, finished second with 12 points. So Liverpool fans are happy. Jurgen Klopp is on a roll. Maria's her whole demeanour in the studio has risen again.
How did Dunica's team get on?
Genk, yeah.
They got beaten 4-0. Great question.
Are you joking? Does that mean we're out?
You're out, Dunners, you're out.
Do I have to continue supporting them now, or can I pick Napoli and jump on the bandwagon?
Well, you're not going to get a Napoli scarf.
You get a new scarf.
Brilliant.
It is half and half, though, so you're well sorted.
Yeah, half Liverpool. Fair play to Timmy Crowe, got me sorted.
Now, lads, it is time for some racing.
Who are we going to talk to about racing? If we only had a guest. Do you know who would be brilliant?
We have our favourite jockey.
Ah, Barry Geraghty. Or someone really sound like Katie Walsh.
Ted Walsh.
Oh, I'd love a hug from Ted Walsh. Be like,
you might get one tonight because Ruby has invited us to the HRI Awards.
Honestly, we're going to be walking in there like entourage, just either side of them.
And just so you both know, this show is over in about 7 minutes.
Oh, don't wish it away, Ruby.
And we'll be in the car in 8 minutes, so...
I need to get ready.
I know, ready. I see you're going to take longer than Marie. Getting your tan sorted out now.
Can't flag if it's true.
So, Ruby, the weekend, you enjoyed it?
It was good racing, Marie, yeah. Cork and Punchestown were on Sunday, Navan was Saturday. There was good racing across the weekend, yeah.
So, Min won the John Durkin?
Yeah, Min won back-to-back John Durkins. He probably jumped a little erratically at times.
Is that the fault of the horse or the jockey?
The horse. The horse does the jump and the jockey's on up on his back.
Well, I want an ask and a horse's opinion on that.
If you get an answer, let me know, will you?
You'll find out tonight now.
Yeah, no, Min was. He jumped the fourth last and the third last very well, but he was very high again at the second last and the last, but he'd back-to-back wins. He beat Hardline, Presenting Percy, who will be the horse a lot of people might take out of the race, who finished third, who was favourite in last year's Gold Cup, trained by Pat Kelly in Galway. He stayed on well, and I'm sure he'll go to the Savills Chase in Leopardstown at Christmas. He might have been the one people will take from the race, but Min did it well, and he's won two John Durkins now.
Do you rate Min?
Min's a very good horse. Without the brilliant Altior, Min would have won the Supreme Novices hurdle at Champion Chase at Cheltenham. He's won 7 or 8 grade ones. He's a very, very good horse, but he just happens to be around in the same era as Altior.
Khaleesi ran in Cork, is that right? No. Go on.
Nearly.
Close.
Go on, help me.
Celius.
Emery.
Yeah.
Hillyway
in Cork. He was only his third one over fences, so it was a really good performance from him. He beat Bally O'Sheen, who's rated 169, which is a fairly high rating for a chaser. And Kelius Emery's a very unexposed horse who's improving rapidly and going the right direction. He won his only start last season and unfortunately got injured before Cheltenham, so he missed the remainder of the year, but he's 2 from 2 this year. Now, where he'll go next will be interesting, probably the Dublin Racing Festival, where he'll have to step up to grade one company, but he was very good in Cork on Sunday.
So Ruby, then next weekend, where is the action?
Next weekend, well, across the channel, it's in Cheltenham, obviously Friday and Saturday. Here there's a card in Fairy House on Saturday. It's a pretty run-of-the-mill card, Marie. Nothing that exciting, maybe a decent beginner's chase where you might have the likes of Bapome or Cockin Man. And then on Sunday in Navan, there is a 7-race card that features the Navan Novice Hurdle, which could see Andy Dufresne of Gordon Elliott's clash with Elixir Danny and Fury Road, and a latest exhibition of Paul Nolan. So that looks a belter of a novice hurdle. But, you know, it's the third Sunday since early November that we're racing in Navan, and you know, there was a pretty poor crowd in Punchestown last Sunday, only sort of 1,700 people. There was a huge crowd in Fairy House the Sunday before that, but, you know, I think racing needs to change around its Sundays a bit. We're geographically racing in the same area too much. I think that, you know, from early in November, sort of the 3rd of November, there was a meeting in Cork. That should have been Clonmel, then a meeting in Navan, Punchestown, Fairy House, Cork. You know, switch it around a bit. It's too much into one place.
So are you saying that you'd like to be on the Racing Fixtures Committee?
There we go.
You know me, Marie, I am always giving out, but I am looking at the betterment of Irish racing, and I think at the moment we have too many meetings into one place, and we had 2 cards on last Sunday, 2 cracking cards, but enough people don't go racing to have 2 quality cards on the one day. One was in Cork, one was in Punchestown. I think one should have been the highlight, and the John Durkin Chase should have been ran in the end of November 17th, around that weekend of November, on the same card as the Morgiana Hurdle.
So obviously supporters don't go because they've seen an awful lot of it, but is it good for the jockeys, the trainers, the horses?
Yeah, there's opportunities for horses, but you can have racing anyway on a Saturday. Like, there's normal cards and they will have a core group of followers, but to get people to go, it needs to be good racing and better quality racing. And when you divide two cards like you did on Sunday, one in Punchestown and one in Cork, you're dividing the quality. If you had those two cards together, you'd have had a brilliant day's racing, but you had them both at either ends of the country. And outside the John Durkin, the racing was pretty average in Punchestown.
Just on Saturday there, Ruby, an English Saracens versus Munster, an English team in Thomond at 5:30 on a Saturday. I don't want to go back and play, but if that was one, I'd go back. I'd love that one. You know, just that type. Is there one for you at the moment? Is there one that you see, a horse, a race that you'd go, I'd tug out for
I
that?
I always enjoyed the Tingle Creek. I thought it was a real test. Speed, no room for error. I really enjoyed the Tingle Creek. So, but having said that, Donica, I don't miss it. Maybe you do.
No, I don't either. But you know what I'm looking forward to? Our brilliant night at your awards. We'll be.
What are you wearing before you go? Do you wear to this awards?
I'm dressing up like a jockey.
Which is?
Like a pair of jobbers, isn't it? Isn't that what you wear? And a gilet.
Is that what Ruby told you to wear?
That's what it is. That's all I've got.
Are you going to talk to us down there, Ruby?
No.
I have to.
You're going to meet your other RTE friends. And we're going to meet you, Carl, to get some tips about this radio show.
On that note, we're off. Tara Stewart is up next.
Game on 2FM. Weekdays from 6:00.